Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. I personally take Super Beets when I need a power boost. It's my favorite product. Super Beets gives me energy and stamina for my busy day. Right now, get a one-month supply free with your first order. Check out the Dr. Hoffman special right now at IntelligentBeets.com. That's IntelligentBeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk about a subject that I think is going to be a very, very, very important subject going into 2015. We'll give you a little bit of a preview of the issue. Seldom has there been an entire category of new nutrients that are about to enter the market in the field of natural health that promise to revolutionize the world of supplements and functional foods. And today we're going to talk about precisely such a category. This is maybe surprising to some of you to hear it, but this category has to do with a controversial substance, marijuana. But it's not about getting high. It's about medical and health applications of marijuana derivatives. Now, full disclosure, if you know me well, I have weighed in against marijuana legislation. Marijuana as a recreational drug, relatively innocuous for some, but there's some definite health harms associated with promulgating this, promoting it, allowing it to fall into the hands of immature kids. And so I've written at great length, if you follow us in our newsletter, about the potential harms of recreational marijuana. On the other hand, there's an entirely different story to be told about certain marijuana derivatives. It is, after all, a natural botanical, and as such has potential harmful effects as well as beneficial effects. When we separate out the beneficial effects, there's really quite a very exciting potential, as I'm sure you'll learn in this podcast. Today's guest is Chris Boucher. He is Vice President of Product Development at a company called CannaVest. Yeah, it sounds a little bit like cannabis, but it's CannaVest. Located in San Diego, California, he's one of true American pioneers of the modern USA hemp industry. He was founder of the Hemp Industries Association in 1992. Hemp is a versatile substance that's used in making clothing. It's used in making foods, and it's very interesting stuff. And there may be a whole host of health benefits to hemp-derived products. And, oh, by the way, the legality of this stuff is coming into focus as laws change, and we're going to explore that whole subject. So welcome to the program, Chris. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
I really appreciate that, Dr. Hoffman, and I look forward to the show.
Okay, indeed. So perhaps you could explain the difference between cannabis that's smoked recreationally, hemp, and medical marijuana.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people want to know what the difference is, and I like to just really break it down into simplicity where you have beer and you have non-alcoholic beer. So you get your marijuana has THC, and the hemp has little or none THC, and you're looking at industrial hemp is 0.3% THC. There's more opiates in a poppy seed than there is in industrial hemp. Marijuana has maybe 15 to 20% THC, and you know, so there's a huge difference. One you can get high with, one you can't. One's basically psychoactive, and the other one's not.
So if you make clothing out of hemp, and say, you know, you're making some shorts out of it, you can literally eat your shorts, and you won't get high from the hemp shorts.
Yeah, tell people you can smoke a joint as big as a telephone pole and you won't get high.
Okay.
It's funny, over the last 30 or 40 years, the marijuana growers have bred the CBD out of marijuana because it actually brings the high down. It is not functional. So a couple years ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, they realized that, wow, the CBD actually has more medical benefits than THC.
And so, and what is CBD? You know, cannabidiol, you know, we're starting to hear more and more about it. There's a whole host of potential applications. What precisely is that?
It's a phytocannabinoid. You know, it is from the cannabinoid family, but it is a cannabidiol, which is kind of a legal issue because it's technically still legal. You know, cannabinoids and cannabidiol, you find them in nature in certain plants, particularly cannabis has the highest amount of any plant we know of. But I think at one time you'll find there was in kale, there was cannabidiols. Also in echinacea, there was a form of cannabidiol, flax. But most of it's been bred out over the years. So I think humans, you know, we've had a 10,000-year existence with hemp and humans.
And so, you know, a lot of people think of medical marijuana as, you know, something like, okay, if you're dying and you're on your last legs, you might as well, you know, get high, enjoy yourself, you know, lose yourself in a you know, fog of oblivion of pot smoke. Or alternatively, if you're in severe pain, or perhaps you've got terrible nausea and due to chemotherapy or something, or if you have advanced cancer, and pot may give you a little bit of an appetite to eat something so you don't waste away. That's the traditional way we look at medical marijuana. It's kind of like an end stage thing, you know, permit people to do it. They've got to be, you know, sick virtually unto death to experience a benefit.
Yes, and what we're finding out now, all this research that's been done on marijuana, a lot of it is focused on the cannabidiol. According to some of the research out there, you know, it creates apoptosis. It's prophylactic cellular encapsulation. Some people are using it for Alzheimer's, anxiety, on and on, shrinking tumors, and so. A lot of people didn't understand that it was the CBD. They just thought, well, it's marijuana and the THC. Mm-hmm. You know, out of 30 different ailments, I'd say only 5 could be used for THC and the other 25 for CBD, you know, depending on the ailment and the studies that are out there. I mean, you can, you know, look up and do your own research on the internet. It's hard for me to make any claims here since we do make products. But
I understand you're in a position where as a layperson, you know, with a company, you know, you can't say, well, and this is part of our current abridgment of free speech when it comes to legitimate, scientifically substantiated medical claims about natural products. You cannot say, for example, that hypothetically cannabidiol is helpful for MS. You could say, however, because of the structure function language of Deschet, which is the current law which governs the way we can talk about supplements, you can say that there are substances therein that may support brain function. You can make sort of a like a weasel word statement, you know, has a connotation rather than a disease claim, because otherwise it becomes a medication. Then you got to go to the FDA. You got to spend millions, tens of perhaps hundreds of millions of dollars for each approval for each indication, correct?
That's 100% correct, and but we can talk about the endocannabinoid system. We can talk about, you know, people can go out and educate themselves, go online, and, you know, nowadays you can pretty much find anything online and really read the research that's out there on cannabidiol and about hemp and its benefits and where it's going. There's literally probably 30 or 40 companies in the last, you know, year or so that have formed around this space.
So what's the legal status of this? And I know this is a moving picture, and you yourself have been involved in writing regulations and proposing legislation to make these natural, non-high-producing products available to the public so that they don't get stigmatized because of their association with a recreational drug. Is this stuff legal? I mean, do you envision this actually making its way into a health food store or you know, the retail market? In the conceivable future?
Yeah, all our legal opinions and just our business model is based upon the legality of industrial hemp. You know, currently industrial hemp is legal in the United States. It was passed through the Farm Bill 2014. And there's also some legal cases out there, the HIA versus the DEA. I don't know if you're familiar with that case. I was one of the original founders of the HIA in 1992. You know, I saw that this industry was going to get really big and decided to co-opt with other people in the industry and form an association. And lo and behold, in 1999-2000, the DEA decided to outlaw hemp shampoo, hemp soap, wow, hemp granola bars. They sent 3,000 letters to all the health food stores back in 2000 saying if you sold anything with hemp oil or hemp seed in it, you'd be in violation of federal law and they would seize your business.
It gives a new meaning to washing your mouth out with soap. I mean, do they think somebody's going to like try to get high? Because you'd have to probably consume 50 soap bars to get even a slight buzz.
Yeah, I'd say more than that. But yeah. Well, the DEAs, they're pretty tricky. They invented a law called reinterpretation. So they reinterpretate congressional law saying, well, Congress never really meant this. This is what they really meant.
Seems to be a lot of that going on these days.
Yeah. Well, we sued the DEA, and it was the first time the DEA ever lost a case of this magnitude. And it was decided in the Ninth Court of Appeals in 2004. And pretty much the judge told the DEA, you're not Congress. If you don't like congressional law, have Congress change it. So, you know, he put it back on the shelves. You know, it took a few years for the stores to, you know, realize that it was legal again. Of course, the DEA didn't send letters out informing all the stores that it was legal again. But so the industry's blossomed. We're talking almost $500 million last year in hemp imports.
Well, this is not a new thing. This is actually a very, very ancient crop. And in fact, you know, you have some hemp fun facts that you send out as part of your press release. And this being, you know, Christmas time, here's a little religious factoid. Jesus used cannabis oil in his holy anointing oil. This according to the Bible, correct?
Yes, and that's been confirmed with Haifa University. It's been confirmed with several religious scholars. If you go to Exodus, in Exodus, I won't give the exact section. I think it's 2032 or 2030, but I don't have it in front of me. But in Exodus, when Moses goes to the mountain, God gives him instructions to make the holy anointing oil. Mm-hmm. And he actually gives
that would be Moses, not Jesus. That even predates Jesus. But so Jesus, you know, the stuff was around during the whole ancient period.
All rabbis for 2,000 years carried holy anointing oil, not just Jesus. So in Exodus, it gives you actually the ingredients, 500 shekels of myrrh, 400 shekels of frankincense, and 500 shekels of, it was called cannabosm. And so when King James interpreted the Bible, you know, went from Aramaic to Greek to English, whether it was on purpose or not, he kind of switched words around. But when we went back to the Old Testament and did some scholars did research, they said, no, this is cannabis, and it was used in the holy anointing oils. And, you know, it just part of our history, part of our cultures.
You might have a pretty good arthritis remedy there because frankincense is the source of boswellin, which is an anti-inflammatory compound, and their anti-inflammatory properties to CBD as well, apparently.
Oh, yes, fungal, antibacterial. It's incredible, the different medicinal properties of CBD, cannabidiol.
And there's a big brouhaha lately about people heading out to Colorado, parents of children with very, very refractory epilepsy that doesn't respond to drugs anymore, obtaining, is it CBD oil, or what is it precisely that they're looking to get?
Yeah, they're getting CBD oil. I mean, you can pretty much buy it in any state. For some reason, some people are hyping them to come to Colorado, but it's hard to get pure CBD oil with low THC. Most of the CBD oil out there has high amounts of THC. So a lot of these young kids, their parents don't want the psychological effects, and actually THC could actually bring on seizures. So they want to get the real low THC oil. And there's a company there that I guess advertised, move to Colorado and we'll give you free oil. But we ship the CBD oil around the world to all 50 states.
So Canavest, I mean, the word vest is it. It sounds like there's some investment aspect to it because it's a growth industry. I think that the marijuana industry is a growth industry because, you know, we're probably going to eventually have, marijuana cigarettes in neat packages or pre-rolled like Marlboro cigarettes. That's a growth industry on that end. But also on the end of nutraceuticals that are going to utilize CBD. So your company actually has, I look at the website of Canavest. You folks can check it out at canavest.com. They've got scientific presentations on the theory behind the cannabinoid system and how the cannabinoid system affects many parts of the body. Very interesting slideshow there. It's a little technical, but I think a lot of our listeners are capable of discerning the meaning of that. Also, you can find products. I mean, you actually sell products through the mail, and that's legal, all 49 states. It's not like, the package is going to arrive and, some DA agents are going to jump out of the bushes and, come through your door?
Yeah, well, again, that boils back to the court case HIA versus DEA, that there are constituents of cannabinoids in hemp. So if you went to Whole Foods and you got hemp seed oil or, a hemp granola bar, there might be, 10 parts per million or 30 parts per million THC in that product. And in no way, shape, or form would it get you high. And like I said, I think earlier that there's more opiates in a poppy seed than there is THC in hemp. And so it wouldn't test positive if they tested it. Now, if they took it to a lab and put it on a mass spec or HPLC, you'd probably find, trace elements in there. But that's what that whole case was about, was that there is cannabinoids in hemp products and they're legal.
Right. So I'm looking at a page where it enumerates the neuroprotective effects of cannabinoids. And certainly we need neuroprotective agents because we've got diseases like MS. We've got diseases like Parkinson's. We've got an epidemic of dementia and Alzheimer's. So anything that we could add to our arsenal of protective agents that help the brain would be welcome. So it says here that there are antioxidant effects. There are anti-inflammatory effects, among others, blood flow promoting effects, neurogenesis effects, in other words, promoting brain repair and the regeneration of neurons, a whole variety of beneficial effects.
Yes, I mean, it's incredible when you start reading about it. And I mean, the science is there, the research is just starting out. Definitely for neuroprotectants, people with brain injuries, Alzheimer's. If you look at what CBD in this research has, what some of the outcome is, and it is, I'd say, cutting edge, to say the least. And the neurogenesis, it's great with cancer for apoptosis and prophylactic cellular encapsulation. I believe the U.S. government, the Health and Human Services of the United States, actually owns the patent on cannabidiol for some of these neuroprotectants, for neurogenesis, and for cellular encapsulation. They did a big study on alcoholics with, degenerative livers, and they were, feeding them CBD and cannabidiol, and they saw some, rejuvenation of cells and, through the reports that I've read.
That it can be beneficial in that kind of inflammatory situation. Also, I have read that there are beneficial effects on mood and anxiety. And I'm not talking about, getting high from marijuana. It's like, okay, I feel good. We envision like a Cheech and Chong movie. Everything's kind of mellow. It's not from the THC in this case. It's a more subtle effect, a not hallucinogenic, mind-bending effect from the CBD that has a gentle mood-enhancing property.
Yes. Some people use it for anxiety, depression. It's definitely a regulator. If you look at the endocannabinoid system, I don't know if we've talked about that yet, but it Yep. definitely feeds into that system and creates, your body produces anandamides, and the CBD mimics that in nature, the closest thing to anandamide, which in Greek means, I think, God bliss. It's where I think they came out with the term runner's high.
Right. Well, let's explain that, because we've heard of endorphins, and that's kind of shorthand for endogenous opiates. In other words, our body makes morphine-like substances in response to pain or in response to starvation. That's why anorexics sometimes get hooked on starving themselves. And, of course, you get the runner's high. Some people get hooked, you know, in a good way. Exercise addiction, you know, opiates are addictive. But then there's an entire different pathway, a set of receptors in the brain, and the brain can be mapped. I've seen some of the amazing diagrams that show the very pervasive presence of cells that have that are endocannabinoid receptors. In other words, the body makes its own cannabinoids.
Yes, and I think they came to this conclusion in about 1991, where just so that's the endocannabinoid system was actually really discovered, we'll say, and so that's not too long ago. I mean, and now as we move forward here, just the media and the research that's going on, I mean, we're going to find out a lot more. I mean, I tell people that, you know, in the future, maybe in a couple years, when you go see your physician and you get your cholesterol checked and your blood pressure, they're going to check your endocannabinoid system for phytocannabinoids.
Hmm.
Because, you know, it's definitely a regulator, and it helps modulate and regulate your nervous system. It regulates serotonin. I mean, it's just this underlying foundational system within our body that we know very little about.
Well, it's interesting because they came up with a drug, and I think you may be familiar with this. I forget the name of the drug, but it was supposed to be the ultimate weight loss pill. And what it was basically anybody who smoked pot knows you get the munchies, right? You get a big appetite. Well, what this pill did is it blocked the cannabinoid receptors so that you wouldn't get the munchies and hence a decreased appetite. However, it had some really bad side effects. It caused depression. It increased the risk of suicide. And so that's an example of what happens when your endocannabinoid system is blocked. You get some really bad things going on. So you want to actually support that system.
Yeah, that's correct. And it's amazing that, you know, the cross-platform of medical benefits that comes through the endocannabinoid system and, you know, cannabidiol. And, you know, again, you know, for it's a touchy subject on, you know, people that use our product or use CBD in general. I mean, the testimonials are just, I mean, I've been doing this for, you know, 20 something years. So, I mean, I've got years and years of testimonials and people have been using the product some of the relief they get, whether it's from depression, whether it's from cancer, whether it's from brain injury. I mean, it's incredible that we really need to do more research, and the government needs to get involved. And I think it's, you know, it's going to save lives. It's going to help give people a better quality of life. And I think at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, is a better quality of life.
Oh, absolutely. All right. This is a good point at which to pause, because we generally divide these podcasts into two parts. So let's stipulate this is part one of our fascinating discussion about something that I think is going to be headlines in 2015. The use of cannabinoid products, potent but non-hallucinogenic, non-stoner properties of the marijuana plant or hemp plant. You're about to say something?
Oh, I was going to say cannabidiol. Cannabinoids technically are illegal. We walk a fine line on the legality of what hemp is. And so the Controlled Substance Act specifically mentions cannabinoids, but nowhere in the Controlled Substance Act does it mention the word cannabidiol.
Okay, so cannabidiol being something that now
is legal.
Has the potential to be dispensed, available over the counter, embodying some of the properties that we know can be helpful for the endocannabinoid system of the brain and the body, correct?
That's correct, yes, yes.
All right, so when we return, part two, more on the subject of CBD with today's guest. He's Chris Boucher of Cannavest Corporation. You can check it out at cannavest.com. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We'll be right back with more of Intelligent Medicine.